Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. I'm Robin.
And I'm Kelsey, and in today's episode, we are going to discuss one of the most commonly supplemented for vitamins in horses, vitamin E. What is it? Does your horse really need it? If so, how much? And why, if you're already feeding a supplement with vitamin E, you're likely doing it wrong. Welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. Today we are going to talk about a supplement that is a good supplement. I just want to start by saying I know we in the past have done a lot of episodes where we maybe poo-poo a lot of supplements, we discourage people from using supplements. And what I want to clarify before people start to say, like, I thought you guys were against supplements, is that there's a difference between a nutritional supplement, something to enhance like vitamins and minerals to improve what is not in your horse's diet, to improve something that's missing, and a training promise in a bottle, right? Like,
yeah. There's a little bit of a difference there.
There's a big difference. And there's a lot of supplements that, like, you know, promise things they can never live up to. And that's quite different than something that is, you know, to replace something that is nutritionally lacking in your horse's diet. So yes, my horses eat supplements. They eat a vitamin E supplement that we're going to talk about today. They also eat a multivitamin for their specific region that they live in. There are supplements that are good supplements and supplements that are bad supplements. So today is an episode about a good supplement. Also, if this is your first dive into nutrition, we did do a like more general nutrition episode, which is episode 48, if you want to check that out.
Right. And it's also that part of it is like when you look at the ingredients in various supplements out there, those ingredients do not add up at all to what that supplement is claiming, to what their advertisement is stating. And so I think when we break down various supplements and we look through their ingredients list and now those ingredients are going to deliver on the promises they're making, that is when we determine it's a good supplement. I mean, part of us looking into this one is to determine is like, is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? And are those results I'm seeing an effect of the ingredients in it? Is it an effect of like a painkiller within the supplement? You know, so it's all of those questions that we try to answer. And so like diving into this one and figuring out, you know, what the ingredients are, what they're designed to do. Are they working that way? What does the research say? Because plenty of supplements that we still are very much so against. But like if we look at a supplement and it has good ingredients and it's going to do what it says it's going to do, then we give it the green light. Like we're not against all supplements just because they're called supplements.
Exactly. Yep. I think you said it all. That's great. I don't know what I was going to say. I don't know where I was going, but you know what? You nailed it. That's exactly what I was saying. It just, you know, understanding the ingredients is key, especially even vitamin E, single ingredient, you know, supplement or what appears to be a single ingredient supplement. Those ingredients are really important and have a huge impact if it's going to work or not or benefit your horse or not. While we may be talking about vitamin E as a good supplement, not all vitamin E supplements are created equal.
No, not at all. And so that's part of the thing is like, you know, you have to look at the research and what it says about that ingredient. Does that ingredient have to be manufactured in a certain way? If someone's not manufacturing it in that specific way, does that render it useless or are they taking a different step to make it still effective? Like there are so many questions to be answered, but we were able to answer most of them with this and be like, yeah, this one's a good one.
The reason we decided to do this episode is because this is actually because of Adeline. So a lot of times when we choose to do episodes, it's because something like happened in our life or with our horses, or it's something that affects us that we want to like research further. So when I discovered a couple years ago that Addie had like a ligament and tendon issue, that she just like had general unsoundness issues, the vet's like recommendation was she gave me a whole list of supplements to put my horse on. And that is kind of where my journey with supplements started, was the vet said, here's a list. She needs a joint supplement. She needs a vitamin supplement. She needs Butylist. So she was on, we did the smart pack. We did like the fanciest joint and tendon supplement. We did their vitamin E and selenium supplement, and we did Butylist for her. And she was on that for about a year. I do feel like I saw a difference at that time. I think maybe a lot of it could have been the Butylist if the Butylist did have an effect. I also think it could have just been Addie being fine at that period of time, probably because she was stalled so much. She wasn't running around and hurting herself like during the day. She was a lot sounder because she wasn't moving as much. I have since done a lot of research and pulled her off of all of those supplements and replaced just with a better multivitamin is kind of where we're at now. She is on a vitamin supplement. But this summer, she spent most of the summer being lame. And I started looking at other sort of diet options because of Hudson going through his issues. I started looking into other diet options. And that's when it became really apparent that vitamin E might be something that she's really missing from her diet. My horses don't eat any grass. I just don't have pasture where they live. So they would get zero vitamin E or very low amounts from their hay. And so I purchased, we're going to talk about Kentucky Equine Research, their Nano E. It's like a liquid vitamin E, and gave that to her. And literally in 4 days, my horse was sound. And not like sound we could go out and ride and gallop sound, but like pasture sound. She was no longer limping around in her, they have like a big arena they can exercise in during the day. She was sound in that. And it was just like, how on earth could this product make her sound in 4 days without being bute? And bute does not make her sound. Like bute has no effect on her whatsoever when it comes to trying to help her when she's lame. I've tried it plenty of times. It has no effect. And neither does Equinox or other prescription medicines have no effect on her. So how did vitamin E makes such a big difference? And so that's why we decided to like, let's find out how vitamin E, how this could even be possible. And of course, I do have a heavy dose of skepticism. You know, could it really have those amazing results that quickly? I don't know. But I swear in 4 days, she was sound.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be a little bit of wishful thinking, a little bit of placebo effect. But I'm
sure
after reading through it and doing the research, I think it is making a difference and that it is an effective supplement.
So with that, do you want to introduce Kentucky Equine Research?
Yes, I will take it away. So obviously, when we go to dig into a product, we also like to dig into who is making that product, because I think that says a lot about it. And this is kind of a unique situation, I would say, where like this product is being sold by Kentucky Equine Research, who is an international equine nutrition research and consultation company. Not many companies we go and look at are research-oriented companies.
Kentucky Equine Research is a really interesting company because they do so much research and they really do put a lot of that out, you know, to the general public.
They do.
In modified forms. In modified forms, in PDFs, and in articles.
That's the caveat, is most of it is modified. There's a handful of times where you'll find like the full publication, but it's so cool. They are doing so much research on diet and the products they're putting out, which I think is really, really neat, because that's not something you see every day.
I will throw a bone to Kentucky Performance Products. I think is not far behind them. They don't do as much research or to the same level, but I do think they also, it's Kentucky. Kentucky just has Gluck. I think they have more research, so much more research happening within the sides of Kentucky, within the state of Kentucky, than a lot of other states have.
They do. And Kentucky Performance, what are they called? Kentucky Equine Performance?
No, Performance Products, KPP.
Okay, yeah. They are one that also has a liquid vitamin E supplement out on the market with very similar ingredients to Kentucky Equine Research's Nano E.
Okay, but this is totally jumping ahead. Why is theirs only available to vets?
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't figure that out. That is my question too. I do not know why.
Because yeah, I saw someone put that in a review and I was like, no way. And then I went and looked at it and I was like,
So what I was reading was that was specific to Canada, but then I also couldn't find a way to buy it here in the States. So I don't know with that one. That one is a weird little, not maybe a red flag, but like an orange flag, you know, maybe a reddish orange flag. I don't know what's going on.
Because it is their water soluble. So it's water soluble, I'm going to say in quotes, version. So it's the same thing as Nano E, but then there's also a third company that makes a quote water soluble form as well. That's not sold just to vets. So I don't understand.
It's a weird conundrum. I don't get that one.
But anyways, Kentucky Equine Research.
Getting back to Kentucky Equine Research, also people refer to it as KER. I keep calling it KER. So you're going to hear me call it KER a bunch throughout this episode.
I hope they call themselves KER, because I also call them KER.
Oh, thank goodness. Because saying KER is awkward, but KER, I could say KER all day long.
Yeah.
So their goals are to advance the industry's knowledge of equine nutrition and exercise physiology, apply that knowledge to produce healthier, more athletic horses, and support nutritional care of all horses throughout their life. Which, you know, not bad things to have set as goals for your company. One of their sayings is research separates the innovator from the imitator. And I love that. I actually really like that saying.
Research separates the What was it?
Research separates the innovator from the imitator. But I think that's, you know, it's kind of like what we've also come to find out throughout a lot of our episodes is like the research behind the products lets you know which products are actually doing things and which products are just kind of faking it until someone claims they've made it.
No, so I guess I think I was getting stuck on like most companies don't do research, or the research they do does not support their product. So yeah, once you start to read the research, that definitely shows you which products are good and which ones are not good.
So Kerr was founded in 1988 by Dr. Joe D. Pagan, or Joseph D. Pagan. He received his bachelor's degree in animal nutrition from University of Arkansas. He then went on to receive his master's and PhD from Cornell in equine nutrition and exercise physiology. On their website, they say Joe Pagan founded Kerr because he realized that information generated from research was not disseminated to those who needed it most, and they now act first and foremost as consultants for feed manufacturers, which I think kind of holds true. A lot of their publications are readily available to feed manufacturers, though us as the individual owner, it's a little bit more difficult to get your hands on those full publications. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also a really cool mentality to go into starting a company, because like that's part of our thing is research isn't easy to come by, or it's not easy to like find or understand, and people refer to plenty of studies out there that you're never able to track down and find because they're never released to the public.
Or they misquote them terribly, horse.com.
Oh my gosh. They are notorious for like bad quotes of studies. You're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
However, they primarily focus on disseminating their research and that information to feed companies and feed manufacturers, not directly to the individual owners. But, you know, you gotta take what you can get. In 2005, Joe received an American Feed Industry Association Award in equine research. This award recognizes excellence in equine nutrition research and the contributions of an individual to equine feeding management practices and the equine feed industry as a whole. Also, in 2005, USEF named Kerr as the official equine nutritionist.
Interesting.
So I did look, and maybe I simply lack the proper sleuthing skills, but I didn't find any like FDA warning letters that have been sent out to Kerr. I didn't see any lawsuits involving Dr. Joe Pagan or Kerr itself. The only lawsuit I found referencing Kentucky equine research was from back in 2000, where a lady had a large amount of like stock stolen from her. And because the stock was then sold, and like she ended up incurring like a $2 million tax liability during this whole thing. And to like get back her money, she established a charitable remainder unit trust with her like remaining $2 million that she had in stock that hadn't been stolen. They like made this trust so that she was like still making money off of it. But where Kentucky Equine Research comes into play with this lawsuit was that apparently in the terms the woman put for the trust was that like upon her death, whatever the remainder balance was to be distributed equally between the Hole in the Wall Gang Fund, Make-A-Wish, and Kentucky Equine Research Foundation.
Those are some diverse interests.
I know.
Those are some diverse interests.
Oh, I had to double check. I was like, there's no other Kentucky Equine Research Foundation, right? That's like getting caught up in the Hole in the Wall Gang Fund.
That is interesting. Wow. I'm glad that she wants to give back to her community in such a like broad way. Gangstas, sick dying kids, and horse nutrition. That's a good combination.
But I, you know, to come across that lawsuit, I looked pretty thoroughly and I didn't see anything really against Kerr or Joe Pagan.
Okay.
Although there was a few funny references that I found. So one statement in a video created by Kerr and an ad featured on their website made kind of a funky comment saying that they have one of the first electrolytes specifically designed for racehorses and to help them bounce back and win again after being given Lasix. Typically, Lasix are used to help prevent exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging is what they're generally advertised for, but they've been known to be used for different things. And one of the goals of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act was to completely eliminate the use of Lasix and racehorses by July 1st of this year. So I think that was kind of like a weird comment to make, because like, if they're trying to ban it, maybe don't reference it. But like, at the same time, I kind of get it. However, what kind of made it a little bit funkier was that comment in the video was then followed up by a bit of video with Bob Baffert speaking about how important race recovery is in his barn.
Oh.
Which like, sure, this video was certainly made a few years ago, But based off of everything that's gone down, I would remove that video. Like, even if you made that before things came out about him and the whole debacle of Medina Spirit and Medina Spirit dying, maybe remove that video now or, like, cut out the parts that he's in.
I mean, the thing is, Bob Baffert has always had not a great reputation, but remember, he's a small fish. So just because everyone and their brother knows who Bob Baffert is does not mean he is worth the FBI or any agency, government agency's time to go after him because he's a small fish.
Right, but it is an interesting person to have pulled to make that advertisement video with, especially following, you know, racing boards trying to eliminate the use of Lasix altogether, and then to have him follow it up and, like, endorsing it is a little of a funky one that I was like, maybe let's just cut this part of the videos out or just remove that video altogether, because it's very clearly from, like, a few years ago, but at the same time, be aware of what's on your site and perhaps make some adjustments.
I mean, hey, George Morris, how many, you know, deals did he have to represent products that everyone knew since day one that he was the scum of the earth? So, you know, people make moves wherever they see a market advantage, you know?
No, but that was the only thing that really on their website that kind of came across not probably received the best.
Yeah.
However, back to being the official equine nutritionist of USEF, Kerr has served as an equine nutrition consultant for the last 6 Olympic Games. Super interesting how big of a role they play in, like, what is being fed at the Olympics and what all they provide. They're not just providing food for U.S. riders. They're providing it for the entirety of those horses being brought in. So for Tokyo, they assisted the national federations with placing orders and sourcing hay, grain, and different supplements. They procured, get this, almost 4,000 pounds of apples and 10,700 pounds of carrots.
Okay, so first off, of course you would need so much food to feed those horses, and they wouldn't be expected to travel with the amount of hay and grain. Of course, I never even thought of that. And you'd want someone credible to find it.
So interesting, because they provide it to everyone. And so kind of what they did is they made it so managers of the horses could pick from several different hay types. So, like, depending on what the horses are. And so some of the other countries that don't have access necessarily to Timothy had, you know, a transition period where they would bring their horses, transition them over onto the Timothy that Kerr was going to be able to provide and stuff. But they ended up sourcing the hay for the Tokyo Olympic Games from Anderson Hay and Grain Company, located in Washington State.
I feed Anderson Timothy to my horses.
And there was, like, a lot of poundage of hay they were sourcing, because you have a lot of horses you're feeding.
Yeah, Anderson is a huge exporter of hay, and this, like, Washington State is super well known for the quality of Timothy we grow. Like, our Timothy is, like, the best Timothy, and Anderson has, like, a huge operation where they do the hay and send all of that over to Japan. And so it's all, like, export hay. So what I buy is the compressed bales, and the compressed bales is, like, the second rate. It's not good enough to ship over to Japan, or it's, like, what's been cut off, like, the remainders or the end of other bales. Yeah, so I buy compressed Timothy from Anderson.
Interesting.
Or from someone who deals in Anderson hay.
So Anderson was the one they sourced hay from for the Tokyo Olympics. And, like, they source a lot of hay from them. On top of that, Kerr also supplied their own electrolyte replacements due to the toll the weather was taking on the athletes.
Wait, the horse athletes, or are they doing stuff for humans too?
No, so it's just for the horses. But they were providing...
Okay, just...
They were providing their Restore electrolyte powder, their Restore paste, and Drink Up, which was, like, to encourage horses to drink. So, like, I think it's kind of interesting, you know, how big of an impact and how big of a play they have, you know, working with USEF and then helping source the feed for horses in the various Olympic Games and, like, you know, advising on nutrition. And then they're also able to provide some of their own supplements. Probably helpful to get their name out there in barns. And, like, once someone uses it then, they're probably more likely to buy it again. But it's all very interesting to me.
Yeah, I never even thought that that would be something that goes into planning the Olympics. Like, that is...
Right?
Yeah, but it makes so much sense. Like, of course they have to do something like that. That is really interesting. I don't know if you came across this or if you're going to talk about it in a second, but Kerr sets their own nutritional standards. So they don't follow the NRC, the National Research Council standards. They set their own, which are very similar to NRC, but they've done some, I've noticed with some of their ingredients, like chromium, for example, the NRC does not have a daily recommendation for chromium, but Kerr does have a daily recommendation and then follows up with a product that has chromium in it.
Interesting. I did not come across that. So that's good information to know. Interesting. Well, getting back on track, Kerr, they have two research centers. One is in Versailles, Kentucky, and then the other one is in Ocala, Florida. Overall, their website is pretty user-friendly. They have an entire tab, of course, dedicated to the research, which makes sense. Being a research-based company, having a, you know, linking directly to your research is very beneficial. Under their research tab, they have the majority of their studies from the last 30 years listed. However, some of these studies, while they list and actively provide the direct publication source so you can read the study in its entirety, the majority of them don't have that linked. It kind of just either summarizes the study without linking the full publication, or it has the PDF that summarizes the study once again, and then they just specify at the bottom where it was originally published. And sometimes their work was only published at a conference, so you can't always find that information or go and read it yourself. Other times they'll publish it in various journals. Those, once again, can be a bit trickier to track down. And at least some of the specific studies I was trying to search for and read, I was having some challenges tracking them down and like finding the full publication.
So I saw a news article the other day where the Biden administration has passed a new law recently that is going to require all research that uses government funds, federal government funds, to be published to the public. And I wonder if that will have any impact on some of these horse studies that, like, because I had to buy a study for this research. And I know a lot of this is privately funded research, but it would be exciting to see if any get, especially if they're done by universities that get federal money.
Yeah, that would be curious.
Yeah, so I'm like really excited for that to happen. I think they have like a year to get all of that in order and start publishing it. But there's some pushback, people not wanting to, because obviously they make money on you having to pay like $300 to get access to something.
Hopefully. I don't know, because we do buy studies. I at least will typically buy 1 to 2 study per episode if I can't find the publication for free. And it's generally, you know, somewhere around like $10 a study. But sometimes they can be way more expensive and you have to find other avenues to locate all the information, which is a little bit frustrating because not everyone has the ability to just go out and drop like $30 to read a study. And like, it's just not feasible for everyone to do that.
Yeah, I got the one I bought for this episode, $30 for a 48-hour rental. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you're not even getting the study. Like, and what I'm talking about, like buying the study, is we're buying like access to it for 24 to 48 hours for like $10.
Yeah.
We don't get to keep the studies. We have to read it, you know, take as many notes as we can to like understand it, and then we lose it in 24 hours.
Also, yes, I understand that there are ways to save those studies, and I was able to save this one. So I do know that there are shortcut methods, but that is not the intent. Like, I'm not supposed to have a downloadable copy of this study.
Yeah, it can be a bit frustrating. Anyways, to kind of, you know, tie up everything about Kentucky Equine Research, is that underneath their products, they will discuss research that was conducted and then provide a link to one of many PDFs that they sometimes seem to cherry pick information from. Although their PDFs seem a little bit better than like SmartPak's PDFs they provide. They're a little bit more thorough, but it's still frustrating because I would like to read the publication as a whole, or at least have it directly linked. If I wanted to go rent the study or buy it, I have that option available. They don't do that, which kind of sucks, but like kind of on par with all the other feed companies out there. But it can certainly feel a bit ironic at times, seeing as the founder, Dr. Joe Pagan, started Kerr because information being learned at the time by like others in research wasn't easily accessible. But, you know, their priority is accessible information to feed companies, not necessarily your owners or your average person like us. But they do have a ton of products. However, we definitely don't have the time right now to dive into each product itself. That would take quite a while. What we are going to talk about and tackle today is their vitamin E product, Nano E. And before we talk about all its ingredients, we'll let Kelsey explain exactly what vitamin E is, what it's doing, why it's good, or why it's bad.
Okay. So yes, I am going to take it away with vitamin E, which is a vitamin I guess I knew very little of before I started this episode, started this research. So I have learned a lot. And I am going to have to ask you guys at this point to put on your chemistry hats, because there's so much chemistry.
I hate chemistry.
Okay, so here's the problem. I love organic chemistry, but this is a biochem. And I hate biochem.
No.
Organic chemistry is easy. You are literally just learning the numbers. You are just figuring out. You are learning a carbon. It's easy.
No.
Biochemistry sucks because it's all the, like, it's adding, it's subtracting, it's all of the, like, meshing it up, taking it apart. And I'm sure someone who has a much deeper understanding of chemistry than me is, like, rolling their eyes. Okay, so to start off this episode, I do want to introduce one of the main researchers behind vitamin E, because I do like to kind of point out who is the doctor or the head of this sort of field of research when there is a clear one. And in this case, it is Carrie Fino. So Carrie Fino is a vet, an associate professor of population health and reproduction at UC Davis. So she got her vet degree in 2004 from the University of Minnesota, their College of Veterinary Medicine. And then she eventually got her PhD from UC Davis. So she is a double doctor. She works at UC Davis being a professor, overseeing a lab. And her lab specializes in the molecular basis for genetic diseases in horse and other companion animals.
Other companion animals, like what?
Like dogs and cats.
Oh, I was thinking camels. I don't know why my mind like immediately went to safari animals.
That's not a companion animal. A companion is an animal that,
listen,
that is a friend. Hey, she considers horses to be companion animals, not livestock, so.
Oh, well, you know what? That is a step forward. That is a move up.
That is a step forward. So one of the big focuses of her research is really to investigate the role of vitamin E and how it affects basically the horse's muscular and neuro function, how it has led to other diseases or how it leads to diseases having in vitamin E deficiency and how to manage those diseases.
Okay.
She received in 2021 the Zoetis Excellence in Research Award. And Zoetis is one of our like pharmacy, they're like, they make, we've talked about them in the deworming episode, they make things like dewormers and pharmaceuticals.
Didn't we also talk about them in the last episode for hawk injections?
Yeah. Just because they are a pharmaceutical company and we've been like hitting on pharmaceuticals and stuff. So, but vitamin E is not a pharmaceutical unless you work for KPP. Then it's a pharmaceutical, but everyone else treats it like a vitamin. So her interest in neurological disorders stem from her previous experience treating a horse named Chocolate. This animal was groomed to be a show horse and he started to like show hind limb lamenesses. And after a series of medical tests and blood tests, they determined he was vitamin E deficient. And Dr. Fino and other veterinary specialists suspected that he had neuroaxonal dystrophy or a neurological disease that affects both horses and humans. And this was due to being deficient in vitamin E. Unfortunately, like this horse Chocolate was too far gone at this point that doing vitamin E supplementation did not like extend his life and he did have to be euthanized. However, this lit a fire under Carrie Fino to start investigating sort of the connection to vitamin E and other diseases. For this episode and for my research, I do rely on a lot of her stuff and a lot of stuff from UC Davis. So one of the studies I use is a 2012 comparative review of vitamin E and associated equine disorders that I'm going to kind of share. But there's a few other things that I use from her. But I just want to say that right now I'm going to cut from that a bunch of different places.
Okay.
What is vitamin E? So vitamin E describes a closely related family of 8 fat-soluble, naturally occurring compounds. So there's 8 different versions of them. There's 2 subgroups. There's the tocopherols, which are saturated, and that's what we're going to talk about mostly is alpha tocopherols when it comes to supplementation. And then you have the other subgroup, which is tocotrienols, which is the unsaturated group, and we don't talk about them at all in equine supplementation. So, but I think tocopherol is sort of like the overarching group when you're talking about vitamins. So vitamin E was discovered in 1922 as an element essential for normal reproductive function in rats.
What?
Yes. So I immediately saw that it was discovered in 1992 and saw this blurb in her research and was like, well, now I have to find a study from 1922. Quick rabbit hole.
I think you mean quick rat hole.
Rat hole, yes. So this study was titled On the Existence of a Hitherto Unrecognized Dietary Factor Essential for Reproduction. They use the word hitherto way too much in this like study. But I love on the existence of a hitherto unrecognized dietary factor. So basically the study wanted to investigate the impacts of diet on rat fertility. Because this is apparently something we really needed to know.
Wait, in 1922, wouldn't they be happy if the rats were, like, not doing so hot?
Yeah, I would agree. Isn't that, like, why are we trying to reverse them being sterile? But that's whatever. These rats also weren't sterile. They were sterile because of what they were being fed. So, like, basically what they wanted, so the study's weird, and I don't understand why they're doing this study, because it makes zero sense. If your goal is to apply this to humans, this isn't going to work. If your goal is to apply this to other animals, this isn't going to work. But they did discover vitamin E, so, like, I guess it's great. So a few snips from the study. So the fact has been abundantly demonstrated that rats may be reared on a dietary regime consisting of purified protein, fat, and carbohydrate, to which an appropriate salt mixture for adequate doses of growth vitamins, fat-soluble A and water-soluble B, have been added. So at this time, in 1922, they knew about vitamin A and vitamin B and vitamin C. I guess they knew about vitamin D. Whoa. It just occurred to me, is that the order in which they were discovered?
Listen, scientists aren't very creative when they go through naming things. If they went through alphabetical order, it's because they ran out of numbers.
Yeah, you're right, Robin.
Yeah.
Is that how our, like, if that, don't burst my bubble, guys. That's the fact I'm going to roll with. Vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, vitamin D, like, they went in alphabetical order, because, yeah. Okay. Anyways, so we have employed a ration of casein, which I'm not sure what that is, cornstarch, and lard. That's what they're feeding the rats, and butterfat and salt.
So healthy.
Yeah, they're receiving this separately and daily, 0.4 grams each, and then a little bit of dried whole yeast. These animals were sterile. I could only find, like, the first two pages of this study, and I don't know if this was the whole study or if there was more, but these rats actually weren't sterile. That wasn't what was going on. So I do think it's interesting that they keep referring to them as being sterile, but what was happening is basically the fetus was getting reabsorbed because there wasn't enough of the different vitamins. That the rat was eating crap. It was eating lard and butter and salt. So the moms were just reabsorbing the fetus. So that's not sterile necessarily, but I guess you could consider that sterile.
I guess.
So they are chiefly so in the first generation and wholly so in the next succeeding one. So the first generation was mostly sterile, and then the second one was completely sterile. The sterility of the dietary origins yields a highly characteristic picture. Natural foodstuffs contain a substance X, which prevents such sterility or which cures the disorder associated with the purified dietary regime. We have thus been able to witness a comparatively sudden restoration of fertility to animals of proven sterility, I don't know what that word is, whose controls continued sterile by the administration of fresh green leaves of lettuce.
So just, like, providing them a healthy diet, they're like, yep, no longer sterile.
Yes, yep, they would become fully restored by eating lettuce. So furthermore, a sample of cod liver oil tested by us and proven to process a much superior vitamin A content to butterfat is far less better than butter in curing or preventing the impairment of reproductive function. Moreover, although some favorable influences on growth have been noticed, it has been impossible for us to secure it with orange juice. The fertility effects are so evident with lettuce alone. So they knew about vitamin C. They knew it wasn't vitamin C because I wasn't working with orange juice, but they knew whatever it was at this point was in lettuce. And also dried alfalfa also fixed the rats' infertility issues. The weird thing with this study is why we're doing rats, I don't know, because the University of California was aided by the Dairy Division of the Bureau of Animal Industry of the United States Department of Agriculture to do this research. Also, the Committee for Research on Sex Problems of the National Research Council was involved with this. and the California Central Creameries. So the dairies were all involved with this.
Why were they so wrapped up in rats? Why not, like, I don't know, take a cow?
Right, and that's what I don't understand. Is this, you're trying to apply this to cows, so now we're feeding cows fresh lettuce? Or, like, are we trying to apply this to humans, and we're trying to figure out if there's something, like, women eating all dairy? Like, that's not great?
Women just eating straight butter, not ideal.
Not ideal. Over the next 50 years, evidence basically emerged that vitamin E was important for not only normal reproduction, but also important for immune health, for neurological health, and for muscular systems and like your skeletal system to properly function. So what is vitamin E exactly? So vitamin E functions as an antioxidant that serves to maintain normal neuromuscular function in the body. Antioxidants are molecules that fight free radicals in your body. So the next section, I used a lot of information from Rutgers University. They have a webpage titled Antioxidants in Horses, and it's a really good source if you want to learn more about like the chemistry behind vitamin E and how it truly affects your horse. But in order to understand antioxidants, you kind of have to understand oxidization, and this is why our chemistry hats have to be on and ready to go.
Oh, goody.
Essentially, oxidization has nothing to do with oxygen. Just let you know that. Originally, the term was only used to describe when oxygen caused an electron to be lost in a reaction, but now it just applies more widely and generally to when an atom, molecule, or ion loses one or more electrons in a chemical reaction. So if you remember what an atom looks like, it's the nucleus in the middle, which is made up of protons and neutrons, and then the electrons are like whizzing around on the outside. They're like your Saturn rings. So oxidization is defined as one of the processes by which energy is obtained from the diet. During this process, nutrients are broken down and converted into energy for normal metabolic function. So the rate of oxidization, the rate that these molecules are broken down, is going to depend on how stressed the body is. So things that could cause stress are exercise, growth, pregnancy, or lactation. That's basically that the body needs more protein, more carbs, and fat, and they're starting to break those down faster. During these metabolic processes, if the regulatory systems in the body are overwhelmed, oxidative stress can occur. Oxidative stress causes an overabundance of circulating molecules called reactive oxygen species, and these are referred to as free radicals. So it's important to note that
free the radicals.
That not all free radicals are ROS. There are different forms of free radicals, and they basically are like super oxidized oxygen. There's just like different forms that are more reactive than the oxygen you breathe. And they can, because they're more reactive and they're less stable, they're missing an electron, which makes them unstable. And it means that they can grab onto things really easily. So what these things often grab onto is like tissues. They often grab onto like the fatty lipids around a cell and start to break down these cells. And those cells can be muscle cells, nervous tissue, skin cells. Vitamin E can be really good if you have a horse that has skin problems.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of these things, they're just breaking stuff down, which can be good because it also breaks down things that cause illness and disease and helps the immune system, but it can also be really bad. So vitamin E is the most important antioxidant. Vitamin E is a fat-soluble vitamin, and it protects cell membranes from damage by free radicals. Cell membranes are comprised of a lipid molecule, and these lipid molecules are very reactive with the free radicals. Unless your horse is on year-round green pasture, he is likely not getting enough vitamin E. Just to scare you for a second. Now that you know the damage that can be caused by free radicals, and you know vitamin E is an antioxidant that helps to bond with these free radicals and remove them from the system, the best source is fresh grass. And not a lot of us have the ability to have our horses on green fresh pasture year round, right?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, my horses are out on pasture all the time, but pasture grass dies at some point in the year. Well, it doesn't die, but like it goes, you know, dormant.
It goes dormant. Yeah, it gets less active. Absolutely. And so it's not producing the same amount of minerals and vitamins in it. However, that they can still get some vitamin E from hay. The drying process does damage the quality of vitamin E. Like it loses like half the vitamin E in the first month of drying, but they're not at zero. And it is important to do a blood test if you do have concerns about vitamin E. If you believe, in my case, my horses would get zero fresh grass, only hay. And I have already been recommended to use vitamin E by a vet that I was like, I should do this. I should make sure I get the right kind and do it.
Right, right.
Signs of vitamin E deficiency can be lack of coordination, muscle wasting, laziness, or laying down frequently. So UC Davis does have a really great horse report from 2018 that discusses the different issues horses can have if they are vitamin E deficient. And it's really important to keep in mind that there are three diseases that are connected to vitamin E deficiency. These are neuromuscular diseases. Just keep that in mind. There's three.
Okay.
I see vitamin E all the time in reviews being recommended for EPM or for other neurological disorders.
Oh.
So there's equine neuroaxonal dystrophy, or equine degenerative myelencephalopathy. So those are like the same thing, and those occur in young animals that are likely a vitamin E deficiency from birth, or their mom is vitamin E deficiency and they're not getting enough from her milk. These are young foals that appear really uncoordinated. They may stand with forelimbs too far apart or too close, and they have a really hard time navigating like bumps or hills. You know, these are diseases that with supplementation of vitamin E can make big differences in their body. Okay, so the second one is equine motor neuron disease. This occurs in older horses that have been vitamin E deficient for more than 18 months. It affects the lower motor neurons, nerves that supply direct neurological input into all muscles. Without these, the associated muscles begin to atrophy, resulting in clinical signs of weakness, weight loss. Affected horses may carry their heads really low and lie down for long periods of time just because their muscles are basically weak, so weak. With treatment, typically this is going to be large doses of vitamin E supplementation. Approximately 14% of horses improve and 40% stabilize but remain disfigured. And then the last 20% progress worse with this disease. So 80% make improvements with vitamin E if you have equine motor neuron disease. And then the last one is vitamin E deficient myopathy. So this is typically found in horses that have been without vitamin E for a short period of time. They show muscle weakness. They have low vitamin E levels in their blood. Like that's the best way to kind of determine if they are a candidate for this. For a horse that just isn't putting on muscle, just doesn't look well, you want to do a blood sample to see how much vitamin E is in their system. And these animals typically recover fairly quickly once they're supplemented with vitamin E. These are the only three neurological diseases that are known to have a direct link to vitamin E. That doesn't mean there aren't more, but these are the only ones that are known at this time. And vitamin E should really only be used to treat horses with these diseases. It should not be used to treat horses with other neurological disorders like EPM. And the reason is because vitamin E is really interesting how it reacts in the body. It's really hard to overdose on vitamin E, but what is really easy to do is for the body to be consumed trying to absorb vitamin E and not be able to absorb other things. So the same metabolic process that absorbs vitamin E also absorbs 50% of like the therapeutic drugs that are on the market. So if you're giving drugs that your horse needs for EPM or something, vitamin E could interfere with its ability, those drugs' ability to be absorbed.
Because the body gets so consumed just focusing on absorbing that vitamin E that it doesn't.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
That it can, and this is, we see this when we do talk about toxicity levels of vitamin E, of giving too much. The studies have sort of demonstrated that the excess vitamin E just begins to interfere with the body's ability to absorb other things in the body. So like I said, you could do a blood test for your horse if you're interested in knowing their vitamin E levels. There is an alpha tocopherol test that is done that takes a blood sample. Your vets can do this for you. If they have more than 2 micrograms per milliliter, that's considered adequate. And if they are less than 2 micrograms per milliliter, that's considered deficient. So your vet can do that test and then they can tell you. The recommended amount, like this is kind of hard to explain. The more I looked, like I'm going to try to explain the recommended amount. It should be easy, but it's also kind of complicated. So the current National Research Council, NRC Daily, recommends that you give your horse 1 to 2 international units or IUs per pound, which translates to 1,000 to 2,000 IUs for your average horse, right? An average horse is between 1,000 and 2,000 pounds. So you're giving that horse 1,000 to 2,000 IUs of their body weight. So one thing to note, this recommendation is based on synthetic levels of vitamin E.
Oh, okay.
Which we're going to talk about the difference between synthetic and natural vitamin E in just a second, because there is a big difference. And a lot of people ask, can I just double the amount of synthetic vitamin E I'm giving my horse in order to meet the same amount of vitamin E? And it doesn't quite work that way, because so if you are feeding your horse, you're going to look at most supplements are going to tell you that there's 200, 300, whatever IUs in a serving of that feed. IU is a potency level. It is not a measurement of weight or volume. It is how potent what you are feeding is. So the conversion has already been done for you. The product you are buying already has factored in how much volume you need to feed for your horse. you don't need to change your math necessarily because it's already been done. They also do not recommend going above that level. They have set the safe upper limits of the diet to be about 10,000 IUs for a horse. You're only going to give about 10,000 IUs if your horse has one of those diseases, and it's usually not for a very long period of time unless your horse does have a hard time processing vitamin E and needs that much. So you wouldn't be giving that much without a vet recommendation. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at giving 1,000 to 2,000 IUs. Unlike other fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin E does not accumulate in the body to toxic levels. For some reason, the liver is really efficient at processing out vitamin E. But like I said, it can interfere with the absorption of other things. And that's why that upper level is set at 10,000 IUs. That's what research found was what was going to start interfering a lot with the absorption of other vitamins and other things.
Right, that makes sense.
Big piece about vitamin E that you're going to hear a lot of people talk about is synthetic versus natural. There is a big difference when it comes to these two things. And there is a reason why natural is recommended for being fed if you're supplementing for vitamin E. If your goal is to supplement for vitamin E, you have to be using natural. You cannot use synthetic. And no, you can't just double the amount of synthetic. It does not work that way. The difference between natural and synthetic is basically the chemical makeup of the molecule itself. So when we're talking about natural vitamin E, you are only usually looking at alpha tocopherol. It's like a triple R A tocopherol. When you are looking at synthetic vitamin E, it is going to be like all eight compounds into one. And horses and humans can only absorb one version of vitamin E. And so when you combine all eight, you're not getting more vitamin E. You're still getting the same amount of vitamin E or less because the horse can only utilize one.
Right, yeah. It doesn't increase potency by putting more versions of it into one thing.
Exactly. And so that's why doing the 50% doesn't work. And I'll explain where that 50% comes from in just a second. But it doesn't work because that is a really common theory. I actually listened to a podcast this morning by a professional horse nutritionist. And I was like, no, you're confusing people when you talk about just doubling it and the 50% thing. That's not it at all. If you're looking at the supplement label, in order to tell if it's natural or synthetic vitamin E, you're going to look at the prefix that's used. So natural vitamin E is D, alpha, whatever. It's most likely going to be tocopherol, spelled R-O-L, but sometimes it's tocopherol, spelled R-Y-L. The R-Y-L versus R-O-L don't really matter. There's a few different forms of vitamin E compound that you'll see depending on the supplement you're feeding. If it has a D-L prefix, that is synthetic. So DL is fine to be in your horse's feed. You might actually see that. It's actually a really good preservative, and a lot of feeds use vitamin E to preserve the supplement, to preserve the grain. I've seen mixed tocopherol is listed under the ingredients for my dog treats. So it's a really common preservative that's safe as far as I can tell. It's not adding any additional vitamin E to your horse's nutrition if it is synthetic. The natural source of vitamin E is extracted from soybean oil. And because this is more expensive to do, the companies doing this love to brag about it. Synthetic vitamin E is derived from petroleum products, and it is comprised of eight different isomers.
Oh, weird.
And again, the horse can only use one. Like petroleum? Like it's not plastic or oil.
Right. If we found vitamin E comes from like green leafy grass, then why are we looking at petroleum?
I don't understand. I don't know. I don't know science well enough to understand why you'd be pulling from petroleum products versus why wouldn't synthetic just be like copying soybean oil? Like if soybean oil has it, then just copy that. I don't know.
This is why we're not the scientists.
We're not the scientists. But when we're talking about synthetic form, because it has the eight different tocopherols mixed together, the eight different stereoisomers, it has about 11 to 12% of the what's called triple R A tocopherol, which is the version horses can use and utilize. So about 12% of synthetic is a usable form for the horse. And this is where we get into biopotency, is that when we're talking about biopotency, so that is when you are taking the conversion of like milligrams to IUs. I know how to explain it, but like you kind of just have to sit there and figure it out yourselves, I feel like. So basically the biopotency is, this is where we get that 50% discussion happening. So if I have natural vitamin E, 1 milligram of natural vitamin E is equal to 1.49 IUs. 1 milligram of synthetic is equal to 1 IU. 1 milligram, so if I have the same amount of weight, my synthetic is less potent than my natural. And this is why people say, well, then just double it. Just give them twice as much synthetic. But then you have to remember the horse can only pull 12%.
Right, so just increasing it does not increase its potency.
Right, and the math has already been done for you. So when you're buying a supplement, they've already, if it's based on synthetic or natural, that supplement is broken out into IUs and being fed based on potency. You can't make it more potent. And that's where like my head gets stuck in a loop because I'm like, wait, can I just double this? No, I can't double it if the math, like that's where I get stuck in the loop. So I hope that kind of makes sense, is that you can't make something more potent just by adding more weight. So the study I did pay for is a 2020 study titled "The Form of Vitamin E Supplementation Affects Oxidative and Inflammatory Response in Exercising Horses." Remember way back in the beginning, I explained, right, what oxidative stress is. That's the process of breaking down the energy and basically dispersing it throughout the horse's body, and the effect that at that time antioxidants would have on any free radicals that are created during that really stressful period or just regular stress. This study is used by every webpage to talk about how good their natural form of vitamin E is. What is really funny to me is it's clear nobody paid for this study, because if they had, they would be bragging way more. Like, I don't think, like, I saw all the bragging and how good, like, this, everyone had just copied and pasted the summary of this study. And I was like, that seems too good to be true. And then I read the study and I was like, wait, the study is even better than the summary.
Really?
Why? Like, you didn't even pay for it, obviously, because you would have had way better things to say in your PDFs.
How often does that happen, though, where, like, you actually read the study and it's better than what they summarized it to be?
Never. It's never happened. This is going to be the one time in history this ever happened.
Right.
But, yeah, I thought that was really interesting because I read it and I was like, well, this is actually better than your little blurbs. So I know that this Buckeye has a PDF of this, and that's because this grant was funded by Mars and Gluck. So Mars is a big supporter of Gluck. We did a whole episode on that like way long ago. And then Mars owns Buckeye. So
yes, they do.
But I have seen others. I think even Kerr refers to this study itself as well. So again, this study is looking at basically the different forms of vitamin E and their effect on the horse and the ability to circulate in the horse's bloodstream. So in this study, we have 18 adult horses that were considered unconditioned stock type horses. Horses were like broken off by age and sex and weight, and then randomly assigned to one of three treatment groups. Group one was synthetic low. That was their thing. And so they received 1,000 IUs of synthetic vitamin E from Trow Nutrition. Second group was synthetic high, which received 4,000 IUs of synthetic vitamin E, again from Trow Nutrition. I think it was the same one. They just like low dosed and high dosed. The third group was natural vitamin E, and they got 4,000 IUs. So it's on the higher end. And they used the micellized vitamin E, and this is M cells, their vitamin E. So that's the third company that has what they call water soluble vitamin E, but it's not. And I think, are you going to explain that or?
I'm going to break down the whole water soluble claim.
Perfect. But basically, micellized is just like tiny. It's just making stuff tiny. But you'll explain it more in a minute. So more scientific version, because it is really important to understand why this works so well. Anyways, Trow Nutrition, I have never heard of them. They do not make feed at all. They are some sort of like livestock feed, but like looking at their website felt very sterile and very uncomfortable. So I don't know who they are. Whatever, they were producing synthetic vitamin E, and I think they just were like a source for it for this study. So normally I skip this part in research studies, but for this study was actually important, and that is talking about the diet that the horses are on. And most of the time the horses are on a pretty like boring diet anyways. For the duration of this project, these horses were housed in stalls that were 12 by 12 stalls. They were given access to a dry lot for about 6 hours a day. So they got access to get out. They were turned out in groups of 9 horses for 6 hours in a dry pen. Otherwise they were in the stalls. So all horses were on a controlled diet of commercially formulated sweet wheat feed that was customized to have no vitamin E in it. The feed was basically, sweet feed. It's just a sweet feed, which is not great. Don't feed your horse a sweet feed. Anyways, to account for the vitamins lacking in the grain, all horses did receive a vitamin topping on top of their grain every day. So they got biotin, which you don't have to feed biotin, but that's another story for another day. Also, vitamin E and then vitamin A were also given to these horses. So the grain alone was determined to be just like a very, very tiny amount of vitamin E, but not enough to be sufficient in to supplement at any level. It was 13% crude protein, 6% crude fat, and 6% crude fiber. And then they also got about 1.5% body weight in the Russell Bermuda grass hay. Something I thought was really interesting in this study is that they did not really talk about fat at all, other than saying that the grain was 6% crude fat.
Right. And for a fat-soluble vitamin, the fat's kind of important.
It's super important. So according to Fino, Carrie Fino, she discusses that vitamin E absorption and transportation has to occur with fat. It cannot be broken down, and little absorption will occur if there isn't enough dietary fat. So her recommendation is a feed that is about 10% fat. So in order to be enough fat for your horse has to either get a full serving of that grain. So if that grain is 6 pounds for a full serving at 10% fat, you have to feed all 6 pounds, or you have to feed extra fat. So do extra fat supplementation. If you're not feeding fat along with your vitamin E, your horses really can't utilize it. And I find it really interesting. I actually did a lot looking to try to see if there was any research that discussed how much fat, what happens when you do feed fat or not. And I couldn't find it anywhere. I did find one study from 1993 that did attempt to look at fat in correlation to feeding vitamin E. And they at that time said that no, there was no connection, but they were feeding synthetic vitamin E. So of course your absorption level would have been hugely impacted in 1993 with synthetic vitamin E, regardless of fat or not. So fat does have to be fed with your supplement for it to be effective. So I feed it with flaxseed, which now that I say that, I hope flaxseed is a fat. But I also feed nano vitamin E for a reason, because I didn't want to have to worry about feeding extra fat to my horse.
Yes, exactly.
So before the beginning of the trial, the horses went a 2-week washout period, basically trying to get them on just like as blank of a diet, as like Ritz cracker of a diet as possible, so that the horses didn't have any extra vitamin E in their system. The horses ate all the food that they were given, though they did say that the horses clearly ate all the grain they were given, because the grain buckets were empty the next morning. And unless those grain buckets were nailed down, there is no way to guarantee that those horses ate their grain.
They've never seen a horse eat out of a bucket. They flip it over 20 different times.
Right? My horses like stand in their buckets, kick it over. Like, unless it's nailed to the wall, there's no way to guarantee the horse ate it, but whatever. These horses were exercised. They had like a whole exercise regime that they went through that was to kind of like see if that had any effect on supplementation of vitamin E. So after the washout phase, blood was collected from the horses at day 0, 7, 29, and 49. And on day 0 and 29, samples were taken when the horses were in their stall at rest and prior to pre-morning feed. Otherwise, I think the tests were taken like later in the day. The results of this were that both natural and synthetic horses showed an increase in vitamin A levels at the end of the study.
Wait, vitamin A or vitamin E?
Vitamin E. I'm sorry. Vitamin E. So both horses showed an increase from where they began in vitamin E levels. But basically, they found that there was an increase, but that it was not statistically significant in the horses that were fed a low amount of synthetic. But they did find it in the horses that were fed synthetic high. 1,000 IUs didn't make a difference. 4,000 IUs of synthetic did make a little difference. The natural treatment group, their vitamin E concentration increased on average 77%.
Wow.
There was a 33% increase for synthetic horses in the high group and a 23% for the synthetic low group. The study confirmed that the micellarized RRR isomer of vitamin E was able to raise and maintain higher levels of vitamin E compared to synthetic in unfit horses for the majority of a 6-week exercise training period. Micellizing vitamin E allows fat-soluble molecule to become water-soluble, as it is surrounded by hydrophilic shell, resulting in a more efficiently absorbed supplement, which may contribute to increased efficacy. So it's the form of which, and we'll go more into this in just a second, I'm almost done. Although the synthetic, high, and natural groups were given an equal dose of the total vitamin E, results from this study confirm previous work in horses and other animals that natural supplements provide more active bioavailable vitamin E, and that natural vitamin E is more bioavailable relative to synthetic supplements. So in conclusion, you can't just feed more synthetic, because if only 11%, like they can only ever absorb that 11 to 12%, you cannot just continue to feed more and hope that it will show in the horse's body. The natural version is better able to bind to protein chains, and 100% of the triple R form binds to protein in order to be broken up and utilized, where only 11% of the synthetic forms and binds.
Okay.
If you are at the point where you're taking blood tests and you're concerned your horse is low in vitamin E, you're likely not looking, you're not low in vitamin E by a very small amount, right? You're either really low in vitamin E,
right,
or you're fine. So that is why looking up ingredients that are more bioavailable are more useful. With that, what are those more bioavailable products?
So one of those products is Nano E. And that's what this whole episode is talking about. Nano E, which is a vitamin E supplement. That's the one that is made and produced and sold by Kentucky Equine Research. Now, there is a few other companies out there, Kentucky Performance Products. And so one of the things that I think is interesting, especially kind of how you were talking about where you pull your research from. Now, Kentucky Equine Research has done a lot of different research on vitamin E, specifically looking at their product Nano E. You always kind of have to take that, like, while it's probably accurate, you also have to notice that, you know, there's gonna be, perhaps they're finding more favorable results because of their product. However, I did look at the other companies, Kentucky Performance Products. They had research available, and they both relatively fell on the same line of results that they were seeing. They were drawing the same conclusions. So that's kind of, you know, I pulled from multiple sources. That way we're not just looking at who is making the product and their research about their own product. We're pulling from multiple different places and multiple sources.
Well, what I find is really interesting about the study I just read, it was done by a feed company reviewing another feed company's product and them going, oh yeah, this works way better.
Which is like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's a really good study.
Exactly. Yeah. Buckeye does not sell a, quote, water-soluble micellarized version of vitamin E. They do not have one.
Right. No, that actually is a really cool study, and it really shows, draws a clear picture of how much of a difference that natural vitamin E is to that synthetic vitamin E. Getting back on track, Nano E, advertised as Nano E, is said to be using advanced nanotechnology to create a rapidly available and absorbed source of vitamin E that enables administration to be timed to provide peak antioxidant protection to performance horses. They follow this up by saying Nano E is a powerful water-soluble liquid vitamin E antioxidant supplement for horses in a unique, rapidly bioavailable form. Before we get into talking about the water-soluble statement and claim, which we'll kind of break it down and explain it, because it's not as straightforward as water soluble, just claiming that the vitamin E is water soluble, right? That's a lot easier to say than it is to explain it, but
agreed.
We're going to explain it.
But I do think it needs to be explained, because I saw reviews saying, thank you for making this water soluble. That means I can feed more of it because it's safe. And it was like, no. That actually means you can feed less of it. Like, do not think that advertisement, it's water soluble, therefore it's safe and won't lead to like toxic levels. No, that's not what that means at all. So I do wish they would clarify on this one.
It's more bioavailable. It is more potent. Like, this is a very effective form of vitamin E. So this is one of those unique supplements where I'm going to read you off the ingredients list, but going through all this research and looking at it, I completely understand what each ingredient is doing, which is really cool and not always something I can confidently say with things. But they break their ingredients list into active ingredients and inactive ingredients. As far as active ingredients goes, the first ingredient in this is water, which hopefully we're all familiar with what that is.
It's a liquid.
It's a liquid, H2O. The second ingredient in it, thankfully, is D-alpha tocopherol, which that's our vitamin E. And as Kelsey talked about earlier, that's a natural source of vitamin E. Those synthetic sources will have that DL prefix. So it'll be like DL something, something tocopherol. As far as your inactive ingredients go, and I was curious, so I looked up, you know, what exactly inactive ingredients, like what's the purpose of inactive ingredients? Because if they're inactive,
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I've never thought of it, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So I looked up, you know, inactive ingredients, they help stabilize the active ingredients and aid in the body's ability to break that active ingredient down and absorb it, which is important with absorbing, you know, vitamin E, absorbing whatever that active ingredient is. Your first inactive ingredient within this product is lecithin, and this is a mixture of fats, and in this case used to stabilize emulsions. And emulsions are a fine dispersion of like minute droplets of one liquid in another, in which it's not soluble but it makes it soluble. A little bit tricky to explain it, but we'll get a little bit more into it. Your next inactive ingredient is going to be polysorbate 80. This can be used as a solubilizing agent that increases the solubility of one agent or ingredient in another, which of course we're talking about a fat-soluble vitamin becoming suddenly water-soluble. Both of these are what make that possible. Your next inactive ingredient is gonna be citric acid. This is used as a natural preservative ingredient and a flavor additive. And then your last inactive ingredient is potassium sorbate, which once again acts as a preservative. So the promising aspects of Nano E, first is that it's a liquid. That's a really good thing. We just talked about that study that Kelsey was reading through and going through. Studies that have been done show that water-soluble, in quotes, vitamin E can be absorbed more efficiently from the gastrointestinal tract and readily disperse into the blood and outlying tissue. Other forms of vitamin E, which are, you know, either oil-based or they're emulsified forms, mean that the digestive tract must break down the vitamin E before it can use it, which delays absorption. And sometimes they don't always break it down as efficiently. So having in that liquid form that's more bioavailable is very beneficial. And like I was talking earlier, this doesn't just come from Kentucky Equine Research. These results and differences between various forms of vitamin E have been seen in a third-party study. They are also using a natural vitamin E, which we're just talking about, rather than synthetic vitamin E. And as we said earlier, it's been found that synthetic vitamin E is significantly less potent than natural vitamin E. And even when you try to feed more of it, of the synthetic version, to outweigh its lesser than potency, it still is only going to be that 11% bioavailability. Feeding more of the synthetic version isn't really going to do anything. And I know we keep saying that, but it bears repeating.
Because it's just like I said, I listened to a podcast by an equine nutritionist, you probably can guess whose podcast, and was very confused when she was talking about this because she recommends synthetic vitamin E.
Oh.
But then she said, but if you need it as a functional ingredient, then you should use natural vitamin E. And I was like, wait, okay, I'm sorry. Because her thing is synthetic keeps the cost down, which is great, but then it's not vitamin E and I don't need it.
Right, exactly. This is something that's going to be frustrating to anybody and everybody forever. Is if you want something that works, you have to pay more and it's more expensive, which sucks.
Oh, everything.
Vitamin E, this supplement, isn't going to be cheap. A synthetic version is going to be cheaper. It's also not going to be effective, really.
Right. If you need vitamin E, you're going to have to pay for it.
Now on to the not really problematic claims, but just kind of like misleading because, you know, saying it's water soluble is a lot easier than saying what's actually going on. So they claim that Nano E is a powerful water soluble liquid vitamin E supplement. The problem is vitamin E is not water soluble. It's fat soluble, but not water soluble. What it is water dispersible. Water soluble means something that will completely dissolve and merge with the substance it is being put into. In this case, that would be merging with water. Typically, water soluble vitamins are carried out to the tissue, but not stored within the body. Water dispersible means it doesn't merge with the substance, but breaks down into minute particles and then distributed equally throughout the substance. For Nano E, what this means is they use, in their own, you know, words, proprietary technology to encapsulate the vitamin E in nanoparticles and then surround those particles with a hydrophilic, so like water-loving outer layer, because Nano E is kind of like a water-hating substance. They surround it in another substance, which is water-loving. This allows those nanoparticles to be rapidly and evenly released into a water-based environment like the gastrointestinal tract. So when I was introducing the ingredients, one of those was lecithin. And in this case, lecithin is helping evenly distribute the vitamin E, that alpha tocopherol, throughout the water. So that's encapsulating it. And then your polysorbate is used to stabilize it, keep it there, and help it evenly distribute across the water. This isn't a bad thing. By doing this, it actually increases the bioavailability of vitamin E. This means more vitamin E is absorbed into the bloodstream and more is available for the body to then use it. And interestingly enough, Kerr actually did a small-scale study back in 2012, and I can find it being referenced on their site, and it specifically says water-dispersible vitamin E. Oddly enough, though, that link to that study on their website no longer works. And I looked up the exact title of it, which is Effects of Water-Dispersible Natural Vitamin E on Serum and Muscle Alpha-Tocopherol in Vitamin E-Deficient Quarter Horses. And I could not find that study on Google Scholar. I could not find that study anywhere. But they've since been replaced by very similar studies referring to it as water-soluble. I don't think water-soluble is necessarily an inaccurate way to describe it. It's just not the full picture of what is going on.
And I think it's just important to hit home that we usually think of water-soluble vitamins or minerals as being really safe because whatever extra is in the body easily gets washed out daily, but fat soluble builds within the body and stays. So most of your vitamin E is going to be stored within yours or the horse's fatty tissue. And it takes a while to break down fatty tissue and release those vitamins like out of the body. So the reason we talked about vitamin E being really hard to make to get to toxic levels, but it's not safe because this is a water-soluble product because it's still a fat-soluble vitamin and still utilized the same way. It's just how it's getting into the body is different.
Right. But when you look at what water-dispersible means, those ingredients on the ingredients list, the lecithin, the polysorbate 80, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Because those are what are helping disperse it equally in that water, break it down to minute scale that it is then being easily absorbed into the horse's system. That was kind of the main thing with it. Otherwise, you know, we've talked about all the ingredients, right? The lecithin, the polysorbate, the citric acid, and the potassium sorbate there at the bottom of the ingredients list. Those are used for a flavor additive and act as preservatives. But overall, it's a good supplement. It's effective. It's working. Everything there that is listed in the ingredients, I can see what it is doing and how it is acting, and it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. They have the correct ingredients there. They have the natural vitamin E. It has lecithin, which is also, you know, a mixture of fats, so you have that fat with your vitamin E. It has all the right things to it. The only problem is it's expensive. And that's because it's effective.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is an expensive supplement. I think for Adeline specifically, it's super worth it. Just knowing that if this will keep her a little bit more comfortable because she's now had, because it supports muscles and tendons, the whole antioxidant thing. I want her to have it because we don't need any grass in my house. but I am planning on doing blood tests for everybody because I am curious. Now that I've started, I have put Hudson and Nim on a lower dose just because they also don't eat any grass, but they don't necessarily have the same issues that Addie does. Like I said, I really like it. There are a few things that I've noticed in the reviews people talking about that I just want to clarify real quick. We've already kind of hit on some of these. The first is that this is not more safe to feed. This is less safe to feed because of how bioavailable it is. So making sure you're not giving your horse extra, you really do want to stay within the recommended potency levels for natural vitamin E. This also isn't going to fix EPM. This isn't going to fix other diseases. Though I do have to question a lot of people, diagnosing EPM is way more difficult and not as straightforward as people think. It's not a blood test. You have to actually do a spinal tap, though we are getting better blood tests that can actually determine if your horse is infected. But then I do wonder, if you are using this for EPM, which that other nutritionist then turned around and said, use vitamin E for EPM. And I was like, wait, you're not supposed to use vitamin E for EPM. Maybe it's not EPM. That was, maybe it is something else, maybe it is a vitamin E deficiency. So the product does require some assembly. So I did see a lot of people complaining about not understanding how to assemble it.
Oh, I saw that.
So it comes with this little, it looks like, not a slinky, kind of like a slinky. It's like this little, it looks like a spring. That's a little plastic spring that you have with a tiny hole in it. And you have to push that all the way in to the hole. If you're not sure if you got it or not, put the cap back on the bottle and the cap will snug it all the way down for you. Then take it off, the cap off, and then you have to hold the bottle completely upside down and then use your syringe. If you do it any other way, it won't work. And you'll make a mess.
Yeah, it's not super user-friendly.
It's not super user-friendly, but, like, once you figure it out, like, it's good. But, yeah, you do have to get that little spring shoved all the way in the bottle. Those were some of the, like, biggest things that I saw people complaining. Some people, of course, always, there's always going to be a picky eater or two in the crowd. I try to put mine, like, on top of their grain. It didn't say I have to syringe it into the horse's mouth. I'm not going to syringe it into my horse's mouth. I'm just going to put it on top of the feed.
Right. I think that's fine.
It works. I'm pretty sure it still works on top of the feed. I saw a lot of people giving up on the syringing into the mouth. And I was like, I read the bottle. I don't think I saw that anywhere that I had to syringe this into the mouth.
They would specify on the bottle if you couldn't mix it with their feed.
And I would have read that. I'm pretty sure I would have read that. And then I did notice a lot of people were saying like 4 days to a week to notice differences with their horses, like lameness. Which is
pretty impressive.
Wow. Like that's really impressive, but I was surprised when it was 4 days, and then seeing other reviews that were like 4 days. I was like, whoa. So I figured when it was 4 days that like, so there's bute in here, like, right? Like there's something stronger in here than just vitamin E.
Well, not according to their ingredients list.
Not according to their ingredients list. But we also were absolutely not paid or promoted in any way to do this episode. But I do want to shout out that I did buy my vitamin E from FarmVet, and I used my 10% off coupon. So you guys, if you are interested in this product, you can buy it from FarmVet. There's lots of other distributors, but you can use your In the Barn discount code and get 10% off. And I did notice that FarmVet actually is like a few dollars cheaper than everyone else with this product. So I was more than happy to buy it from them.
We weren't paid or anything for this. It was just really exciting because this was something that Kelsey started using with her pony, saw a big difference. So we wanted to do research on it. And it's always exciting when you see something that has research behind it, and then like everything just falls into place that it's effective. I mean, how cool is it? We found an effective supplement. That's cool.
Yeah, and for those of you who have started going down like the more forage-based diets, which is what I'm now doing with my horses, so I don't feed a balancer anymore. I've like moved on to a different phase in my feeding program. Don't like my horses, I like change my feeding program like entirely every like year to 18 months, so this isn't nothing new for me. The vitamin E is one of the things that is recommended for horses that are likely going to need supplementation. It's one of the few things in that program that you might need a supplement for if you are also doing like a regular multivitamin. So this is a good product to kind of look into if you actually want vitamin E, because a lot of products that say they have vitamin E, even if it is the natural form, it is usually just there for a preservative.
Yeah.
Unless you're actually supplementing for a vitamin E specific supplement, you're not getting the amount of vitamin E you would need to make any of it worth your time. Because I know I spent a long time looking at vitamins and I was like, okay, I need selenium because I live in the Pacific Northwest and I want to make sure they have vitamin E because we don't eat a lot of grass. And I could not find a product that had everything I wanted. I finally thought I found a product only to realize that like actually that vitamin E was probably not doing anything, and especially not the way I was feeding it, that I wasn't feeding any fat or anything along with it.
So if you need a vitamin E supplement, this is a great one. If you guys have any comments, questions, concerns, don't be afraid to reach out to us on Instagram at inthebarn.pod, or you can send us an email inthebarnpod@gmail.com. Make sure as always to leave us a review, because those help us get noticed in the algorithm and make people more aware of our podcast. And if you want more people to know about research, that's how you gotta let them know.
Yeah, people in Iceland have really been loving us the last few weeks. So hi, Iceland.
We've been popping off in Iceland, which is, that's something I've always wanted to do in life. So I'm pretty thrilled with us on that front.
Yeah.
On that note, guys, remember to stay safe, stay classy, and stay in the saddle.
And eat lettuce. Less lard and more lettuce.
If you want your rats to be fertile, less lard, more lettuce.